the message to the corporate world is, we can't keep driving just for the bottom line profit at the expense of the people, because it's the people that create the profit. But when they feel valued, their wall comes down, their cooperation and energy flood out. And what organization couldn't use more cooperation and energy? Because when we just are siloed and it's all about the bottom line, and it's all about right and wrong and win and lose and life and death, we're leaving 40, 50, 60% of a person's creativity out in the car in the parking lot. Let's make people matter again.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I always look forward to this time of the week. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Dave Blanchard. Dave is CEO of the Og Mandino Group. Dave is also an inspirational speaker, an author and coach, and he works with people helping them take control of their thought processes and their goals in business and in their personal lives. Dave has a background in sales, in management, in real estate. He's been on TV and film. He's written film scripts that he tells us about in the interview. And now he runs the Og Mandino Company that teach the lessons of Og's famous book, The Greatest Salesman in the World. Dave's mission is to carry Og's mission and vision into the 21st century. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where between now and January the 15th, 2019, we are offering a complimentary marketing health check for your business. That's right, it's complimentary, no obligations. It's a health check complete with a report that comes back to you and outlines action steps for the next 90 days. We'll assess the current health of your marketing specific to your 90-day plan and give you a report with the three key steps you can take to transform your marketing into an effective lead generation machine so that you can serve the people you care about much better. Just visit innovabiz.co/MAS to get started. Now, if you don't yet have an account, click on the blue Take a Peek Inside button. This complimentary offer is only available until the 15th of January 2019, so get in quick. In our discussion today, Dave talked to me about how our own experiences, both good and bad, can be used in a way to empathize and connect with others. And in that way, we can serve them better. We talked about making sure that you are coming from a burning desire to serve, to change lives, to make a difference, and how that will actually guarantee your success. And we talked about how a filmmaking career led Dave to become the CEO of the Og Mandino Company. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Dave Blanchard. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from near Salt Lake City in the USA, Dave Blanchard, who's the CEO of the Og Mandino Group. Dave is also an inspirational speaker, an author, a coach, and he works with people helping them take control of their processes, their thought processes, and their goals in business and also in their personal lives. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Dave. It's a great privilege to have you here.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
Dave has a background in sales, in management, in real estate, in TV and film, and he now runs the Og Mandino Company that teaches the lessons from Og's famous book, The Greatest Salesman in the World, and also carrying on Og's mission. So his mission, Dave's mission, is to carry Og's mission into the 21st century. So I'm really looking forward to explore that and various facets of leadership and inspiration that are related to that. But before we start talking about all things leadership and inspiration, Dave, let's find out a bit more about you as a person.
So as a young child, what did you want to do when you grew up? Or what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a professional football player.
All right.
And I dedicated a lot of my life. I was a good student. I had a scholarship offer at the Ivy League to Brown University. But I wanted to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got into college football, I once wrote that every day a body part weakened and every week a body part failed. I was running out of body parts. And I remember the day I took my pads off for the last time. I'm in my dorm room and I went, I am not going to be a professional football player. Now what do I do? Now what do I do? That's what I wanted as a child.
Yeah. So the reality of constant injuries and wear and tear kind of set you on a different path then.
Did I? I'm 65 and it still takes about an hour in the morning in my gym at home to get my body loosened up so that I can get through the day. There's so many achy parts, but the lessons learned were so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. So where did you head after that experience with the, focusing all your energy and efforts on becoming a professional football player and then deciding that wasn't the path for you?
Well, psychology.
Mm-hmm.
After school, I joined a financial organization called Penn Mutual, if anybody's familiar with Penn Mutual Life Insurance Company. I still wear the ring. I'm 23 years old. This is their highest order. I'm showing it to you on the screen. I know they won't be able to see it, but it's called the Royal Blue Ring. It's the highest club at Penn Mutual, 23. I made $150,000. That was 1976. Mm-hmm. I still wear this to remind me of what can be accomplished when you really put your mind to it. Financial services, specialized with doctors, found out they needed more than insurance. And before we knew it, we had the largest medical management consulting firm south of Los Angeles in San Diego. And that morphed into a real estate development firm. And then 1989 happened in the United States and California. Market collapsed. Millions of dollars went through my fingers like water. You couldn't stop it. And when it was all over, I owed $1 million. I was the corporate guarantor of all the lines of credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent 10 years paying that back. And what did I do? Well, I had a hobby, and it was making films. Did one on child abuse prevention. Matter of fact, that particular film is in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United States, 30,000 schools. And every U.S. military base worldwide, every defense services system worldwide. And I did one on teenage drinking and driving that played on the video network on television. I was in 30,000 school districts as well. And I thought, I think I'm just going to go in the film business. So I went in the film business, writing and directing TV commercials, wrote 5 feature film scripts, met the Mandino family, wrote a script for one of his books called The Christ Commission. And in 2000, when The Rights to the Greatest Salesman came up, Betty called me. I was in New York shooting commercials for CNBC, and she said, Dave, the rights are not being renewed. I wanted to call you first. You want them.
Hmm.
And I remember saying, Betty, is this a rhetorical question? Because I found Og in the darkest of dark nights, and he was like an old shoe. He just fit really well.
Hmm.
And I said, Betty, I'll leave the film business. So I came home and left the film business. And we started the official Og Mandino company. In the last 18 years, we've just been changing lives. It's been a wonderful experience.
Mm. So in a snapshot then, tell us what you do now and why.
Well, the darkest night, I had $1 million life insurance policy and $1 million in debt. And the policy was getting ready to lapse. So you kind of get an idea where my mind might have been. And the sun came up the next morning. And I said, I long to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. Of course, it was my cry that needed to change. And I just made a promise that day. I said, show me how to dig out of this. Show me how to dig out of this, and I will spend the rest of my life helping other people do so. Well, the next 8 years were pretty thorough training. And if I were to capsulize it, to say, this is what it is. Well, my mission is healing torn bodies and torn minds. helping people find out their habits of thinking that are strength, the habits of thinking that are sabotaging their life. Those habits of thinking are like a fully charged fire hose with a brass nozzle that's flopping all over, knocking stuff down. How to manage those things? Because it all starts with our habits of thinking. So I've dedicated my life to helping people master their habits of thinking, healing torn bodies and torn minds.
Hmm. And there's a wonderful TED talk you gave where you talk about that experience, and you also talk about the baggage, though, or the sack, I think you term it, that we carry around on our shoulders. And you bring out this orb. And so maybe you can give us a bit of a snapshot of that, because I think there's a very powerful message in that.
Well, I was in the care and keeping of a pedophile age 3 through 5. That left some wounds. We all have wounds. I don't say that because it's bigger or better. It could be our fifth grade teacher said something to us. It just devastated us. Whatever it is, we're carrying this stuff around in a big bag. It was a dream I had. It's called the Chicago Dream. Big bag we're dragging around behind us. And in the dream, I was asked to turn around, face the sack, empty the sack. And it was a stack of silver orbs with spikes on them. I was asked to pick up the most painful, which was that experience as a child. And I was asked a very interesting question. Dave, anybody else suffering from a similar wound?
Mm.
And I said, yes. Then engrave this on your heart. And when I did, I just felt more whole. And I had a pretty big pile, so I did that multiple times. Anybody else suffering from a similar wound? Yes, engrave it on your heart. And then these words were spoken to me. Dave, your character was forged in the furnace of adversity. You know what pain feels like. I nodded my head, yes. Can you take it back? No. But you can choose to use it as a rich resource to better understand what somebody else is going through. And if you'll use it that way, there'll finally be purpose in that suffering, joy in your journey, and much needed healing in your soul. And there was somebody in the dream that I was approaching that I turned away from that had this experience. And I turned back and found that he was also dragging a big white muslin sack over his shoulder. And somehow I knew what was in it. For our audience, bottom line is this: we've all had experiences, painful experiences, but I discovered they are our greatest asset. They have uniquely prepared us to serve. If we use those experiences as a resource, not as a burden, you know, like a victim, but as a resource, we will hear things nobody else hears. We will see things nobody else sees. And we will ask questions that nobody else dare to ask, and it will make all the difference. We'll see someone physically, viscerally go, finally, somebody understands me. Down comes their wall of resistance. Out pours their cooperation and energy. And we're the beneficiary. And we get to connect, bringing our life experiences with us, not as burdens, but as blessings.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that story. I love the way you present it. And there's such a powerful, there's a lot of powerful messages in there. But the key one for me is take the bad experiences that are on your mind and use them in a positive way and use them as experiences to connect with others.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't get to throw them away.
That's
people
right.
try, but they don't go away, but we can't repurpose them. Repurpose them.
That's right. And I was speaking to Linda Ugolo, whose episode I think we published this week, about the fear of public speaking, and she had a similar philosophy around that. There's a train of thought that says, break through the fears, just face the fears and do it anyway. And her philosophy was very much embrace the fear and turn that negative voice in your head into your most powerful ally and your coach moving forward. So I think, that's a very consistent message here. Of course, this is a little bigger than just speaking in public.
But it does ground one.
Mm.
that if we have owned our life experience and we stand on a stage and our mission is to touch hearts and lift people, and there's a message we want so badly to share, please, how could we have any fear? This is not about us. The only anxiety we might be feeling is this getting into their heart?
Yeah.
So we're just paying attention, and we see somebody smile, and we see somebody cross their arms, and we just paying attention to the audience. Then there's no fear.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I love that you said it's not about us, because I think that's where a lot of the fear comes from. We're worried about whether our hair's in place, or whether we might say the wrong thing, or whether people might see that we're a bit nervous about appearing in front of them. All of that's about us. And as you say, you know, you're there to serve the audience. And if you have that mindset, it totally changes things.
Yeah. We'd be less concerned about what people think about us if we knew how little they actually do.
Yeah.
They were in their own world thinking about themselves, and we show up in their world.
Yeah.
We're the coolest person on the planet.
Yeah, it's good when you put it that way to remind people of it. Okay, now I know that, you know, you mentioned that you've done quite a bit of work in TV and so on, and part of that is getting a message out there that you're doing so well. You're speaking there in that TED Talk. It's such a powerful message. What would be your advice to our audience? You know, a lot of them are looking to get a message out into the world and perhaps finding it a little frustrating.
I saw a comic the other day, and there was a woman, she was praying to God, and she says, I bought the funnel, why am I not a millionaire? I bought the funnel, why am I not a millionaire? And the angel comes down and delivers a message, and she opens it up and it says, because you're not a guru and your content sucks. Kind of crude.
Yeah.
The very first thing we want to focus on is not, I talk to people, say, I want to speak. And I say, about what? I want to be a writer. About what? Mm. I didn't set out to be a speaker or an author. I couldn't stop it. The question is, what's inside of you that has moved you, changed you, that if someone else were to apply those principles in their life, they could be blessed as well? We want to make sure that we're coming from a burning desire to make a difference in the lives of people, not a desire to be rich and famous. I was speaking in front of a group who said they wanted to be writers. And I said, how many of you want to be writers? And every hand went up in the room, hundreds of people. And I said, how many of you write 1 hour a day, no matter what?
There was only a few hands.
Yeah. And I said, I don't want to offend you, but I want you to look inside for just a moment. Do you want to be a writer, or do you want to be rich and famous? Hmm. If you're writing the book to sell a million copies, you're in trouble. If you're writing the book to change somebody's life, you want it speaking to their soul, you write a bestseller. So I think it's just the focus. Is it about fame and fortune? Or is it about changing lives, making it different, lifting, building? So those who are listening who want to do this, I'm hoping that you're coming from a burning desire to make a difference, to leave what I call a footprint on this planet. A legacy, something that matters, something that changed lives, and write from that space, speak from that space. You won't have trouble getting stages. You won't have trouble writing books or selling them. That's just a marketing function. It's when we try to do that without substance.
Yeah, well, there's so much gold in that advice, and a lot of there is, unfortunately, it's become so easy to publish information with the internet these days and self-publish books. And one, well, that's not unfortunate, but one of the unfortunate consequences of that is that there is so much stuff there that lacks substance. And perhaps the motivation is not to help others or serve others. So great advice there. Now, we were chatting.
And we don't want to make that assumption that's the case. No. I just ask people to be introspective about what their desire is. What's their secret desire, their real intention? That's all. Just take a look at that.
And you mentioned the example of the writers and people, a lot of the people that said they wanted to be writers, then not saying that they wrote every day. So to look at yourself and your habits in terms of what do I do every day, and if I don't write every day, do I really want to be a writer? That kind of speaks a little bit to the underlying motivations, doesn't it?
It does.
Hmm.
So when you write every morning, and when I'm writing a book, it's 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. That's the only time I've got available.
Hmm.
Try to go to bed a little bit earlier, so get at least 4 or 5 hours of sleep, but from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., and that is really a wonderful time of the day, by the way. Just downloads of information. But some mornings are just as dry as a desert. And it's like, if I'd wasted my 4 hours today, and 2 days later you find out that some little nugget that came during that period of time becomes the catalyst for an entire chapter in a book. So no day is ever wasted. If we want to be inspired and write things that are inspiring, we write every day. We just discipline ourselves to be there. And it's got to be for a long enough period of time that it's not creativity on demand. It's long enough to be there, to meditate, to ponder, to be still, to listen. Mm. Those are all part of writing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, certainly. I know there's a lot of people that talk about journaling every day and writing, but certainly it does, I find it makes a big difference if you take the time to write things out and write out your thoughts. And sometimes, like in those days where I feel as though there's nothing coming out, so to speak, the desert days, I'll just write down, you know, what happened yesterday? What am I thinking right now? And reading back over it, it might be total garbage, but it kind of just keeps that momentum going. And then, like you say, the next day you might have some brilliant idea.
Have you written something before and then a few days later read it and you went, dang, this is really good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even remember.
At the time you thought, oh, gee, this is tough. It's not really coming out today. And, yeah, like you say, a couple of days later you think, gee, that was actually pretty good.
The joy in the book for those who want to write is paying the price, and I think there's a price, to be connected with the universe. I call that God, but you can call it whatever you want, that universal force, that when we're plugged into it, and every artist, every musician, every writer knows that moment when the download comes. And if I have somebody wired to a functional MRI in one of those moments, we would literally see part of the brain ignite that's normally dormant in a human being. Just lights us up. I think that's what keeps us writing. It's like playing golf. You know, you get one good shot, you just keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with writing. You have a morning like that, it'll fuel you for a month. Mm-hmm. One good morning like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm awesome. Right. Yes.
Now, one of the other things we talked about in the introduction before we actually started recording the podcast interview was the challenge that a lot of companies face engaging millennials. And I know you spend quite a bit of time speaking at schools and other youth groups. So one of the in corporations these days, there's quite a common belief that millennials are different in the way they approach life, and you know they've grown up in a totally different world that perhaps we did so many years ago, and that the companies are actually having difficulty gaining their loyalty and getting the best out of them. And so at the extreme, there's a very negative perception of millennials and how they perhaps can contribute to the company or the society. So I know you've got some strong thoughts on that based on a lot of the experiences you've had working with them. So tell us a little bit more about that.
My favorite, I got called back to my alma mater to speak. there were two of us. A gentleman spoke before me, and he was working on Wall Street in a big firm. And he gave them step by step of what it took from the day he graduated till the day he actually secured this job. And I saw sheer panic in the audience. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Then I got up and talked about vivid visualization and how to use it to get inspired ideas that ignite passion and drive action, because we had completed several habit finder assessments with students before I spoke, several hundred. What we found is different. When we're working with entrepreneurial minds, independent thinkers, about 97% of them are very vivid in their visualization and very analytical, obsessive thinkers. They're thinking all the time. They never stop. We found 97% of the student body with those measurements. Hmm. These are highly visual, obsessively thinking individuals, which means they have a risk of living in their mind, tolerating reality, and sometimes beating themselves up a little bit over it. Now, you think about this. They live in their mind, and they tolerate reality. You've seen the joke, some of the YouTube videos about someone applying for a job, and they need to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning and work for 8 hours. And what? 8 hours? How can I do 8 hours? Well, they live in their mind where things happen in a nanosecond. Hmm. If we take a millennial and we bring them in, we have to create an organization that fosters their gifting. Traditional corporate America does not. Corporate America typically, and I say America, corporations in general, are very hierarchical. You have a manager, they got to a new position, they pee in the four corners and lift up the ladder and claim the department, and now they're going to direct. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. Millennials are not order takers.
Yeah.
They want to participate in the process. And when managers grasp the beauty of my job is to pull out the best in my people, which means when I walk into a meeting with a millennial, I don't tell them what we're going to do. I propose the problem. Here's what needs to be solved. What do you think we should do? And then I listen. Hmm. I find good in their idea, because what I know is that their idea is attached to their self-esteem. Ah, so I really have to look for the good. Ooh, what I like best about that idea is this. Write it down on the board. Turn to the next millennial. What do you think we should do? I think we ought to do that. Turn to the first one. What do you like about that idea? What do you like about that idea? And pretty soon there's a collaborative brainstorm, and we're in the place where they live, in their very creative minds, pulling out the best of ideas. And when we're done, the manager simply says, gosh, the only thing I would add to that is this. What do you think of that? To which they'll say, great. And they'll incorporate the manager's idea in with their idea. When the idea is finalized, who wants to do this piece? Me. Who wants to do this piece? Me. We're not pushing a rope any longer with mandated structured time. We've got creative people with ownership in an idea executing it with excitement. That's how we engage millennials. And most corporations are not designed to pull the best out of their people. They're designed to dictate, direct, you know, go do, report, come back. We're asking them to participate in the one place they hate the most, which is the present. We want to get inside their head.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's there's a lot of great advice in that. And my own experience is that millennials, and I found an article, and I can't remember the details now, but it was from the 1960s, and it listed all the things that the management generation of the time, if you like, were complaining about the youth of the day. And it was essentially the same thing. And the article then went on to compare the youth of the 60s with millennial generation and said, really, nothing much has changed except the external environment to some degree. So that, yes, we've got the technology, and yes, today's millennials are much more savvy in that technology, and therefore there's implications from that, but at the core of it, at their behavior level and at their belief level, the youth want to be involved. They want to be contributing. So, you know,
they want to be contributing, and they want to make profit with a purpose.
Yeah. They're looking for meaning.
They don't want to just make profit. They're looking for meaning. They're looking for something that's substantive in this process. So they want to add to it, make it substantive, go do something that matters. You keep them engaged in that piece, and you'll have a loyal person. Because we're honoring their gifting.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, of course, it comes back to what you were talking about earlier about building that empathetic connection with other people.
Yes.
Based on your own experience and your own knowledge.
And that's not their gifting, by the way. You know, they'll sit in the back seat of a car and text with each other.
Yeah.
But they're just not interpersonal connectors. But they're very creative, analytical, visual thinkers.
Now, you made brief mention there of the Habits Finder, and I think it's worth exploring that and certainly the principles behind that a little bit more. I know I had a look at it and went through and did the exercise myself the other day. So tell us a little bit about the Habit Finder and what the principles are behind that.
Certainly. When I took over as the CEO of the Augmandino companies, first thing, we have to find measurement. You can measure it, you can improve it. We founded the University of Tennessee. It's a formal mathematical science. It employs Cantor's transfinite calculus to measure our intrinsic, extrinsic, systemic thought. Nobody needs to remember that, except for we think in those three dimensions. So when someone takes the Habit Finder, we're not asking them to answer questions. We're asking them to rank words or phrases. Each word or phrase is a mathematical symbol. And they put them in the order in which they think they should be in. Math is totally objective. There is a hierarchy. No one's going to argue it. No mathematician argues the mathematical hierarchy. The words or phrases have been scientifically validated to represent those and have passed EEOC certification. So someone ranks them. We compare how a person ranks them with the hierarchy, and we know where their habits of thinking will support them and where their habits of thinking might create some challenges. So we can finally get below the level of personality and aptitude and behavior and get to the habits of thinking that are driving all of that. We finally know. And in 15 minutes, you know how short it takes. It's like, how did you know all of this from this simple process? Well, that was an Aleph Index 1 to the power of an Aleph Index 1. That was an Aleph Index 0 to, you know, it's all mathematics. It's how you think. And here are the risks in thinking that way. Is this serving you? And more importantly, most importantly, in the measurements of the Habit Finder, you'll find a bar with a green in the middle, and it can go to the left or right. You're the green. You're the green. When we're on our best behavior, being our very best self, conscious, alert, the book I wrote, The Observer's Chair, we're sitting in the observer's chair practicing metacognition, which is the ability to reflect on our own thinking and to make choices. We're in control of our life. When one of those habits of thinking wants us to get out of this chair, go sit in that chair over there, have a chain wrapped around us and duct tape put over our mouth, and it speaks for us, what happens? Oh, my goodness. My wife gets angry with me, or this happens at work, or, yeah, is that serving you? No. Why don't we stay over here? Let's get you in the observer's chair sooner, stay here longer. Let's develop a new habit of thinking so that habit over there doesn't keep distracting you and impacting your efforts to succeed. We finally know the very elements that are driving success or failure, habits of thinking. We measure them. That's the Habit Finder. Simple name, habitfinder.com. And it's free right now. We let everybody take it. Not only can they take it, they get the full 45-page report. There's no moment in the process where we stop and say, okay, if you want the rest of it, you got to pay $29.95. That may happen eventually. But right now, we want everybody to have this. Because with that, we can show them that we can get to the real issues. Then if they want us to help them, we'll share with them what we can do.
Yeah.
We want everybody to take a habit finder.
Yeah, it's quite a quite an insightful tool, I thought. And you were mentioning to me also at the beginning that you've taken that a level further in terms of how then to communicate with those people once you've identified the habits and the patterns of behavior that are underlying those.
We do a lot of group coaching and individual coaching. And we have a live coaching session every Tuesday at noon Mountain Time, the United States Mountain Time. It's all live. But some people can't afford to coach in a group or individually. It's quite an investment. So we're creating a new program that'll be out the first quarter of next year called Habit Slayer. Tagline is conquering the enemy that never sleeps. That's our habits of thinking.
Yeah.
That makes us act in ways we do not know, Ogmandino says. And the marketing piece that goes with it says, if you're tired of looking at the castle and never sleeping in it, this program's for you. So that Habit Slayer is going to be out as a program. So take your habit finder, and then we'll stay in touch with you and let you know when that's going to be available. Then we're taking it one step further in the first half of next year. Amazon, Facebook, Google, all analytics companies. Great analytics, buying preferences, etc. So imagine being able to know how your customer thinks.
Hmm.
The real habits of thinking. Because we now have a dashboard. The 100,000 people have taken the assessment. We crunched all that data into a dashboard. We know how our people think. We know where their strengths and challenges are, so we can serve them even more effectively. First half of next year, we're going to start doing that with other companies. They get to offer to their database Habit Slayer. Then the data that comes back will be in a dashboard that will help them know how to better serve their people. We're very excited about becoming the ultimate analytics company, the ultimate analytics company. Habits of thinking. Priceless information if you really are in the business of serving.
Yeah. Yeah. I was quite excited when I heard about that, because I think the potential for using that information for good is enormous. And like you say, the habits and, you know, aspirations and dreams that people have, the habits kind of underpin that, but also get in the way in some cases when they're not serving them. So, yeah. Putting that data at your fingertips really helps you serve them much better.
I might add to you, one of the things that we do is very similar to this. When I speak, if the organization that's hiring me will allow us to offer the Habit Finder to everybody in the audience, we create a team DNA report, which is all the habits of the entire audience and where are the challenges. Then I can customize what I'm going to say to how they're thinking. And I actually had somebody in the audience recently shout from about the third row back, "You're inside my head."
Yeah.
Well, it was. I knew how 75%, 85%, 97% of them thought. So we could really serve them by talking to their habits. How is that habit serving you?
Mm. That's good. That's yeah. Wonderful. Team DNA, yeah, I love it. I love the scientific foundation of it as well, and that it works so well, obviously, is the key. We do a lot of work with our clients up front before they start, whether it's marketing or podcasting or writing blogs, in terms of identifying their audience, who they are, what they believe, and also what their biggest challenges are, so that they can actually put out the content or the service or product that will actually serve them best. And so this is another way to really do that, probably at a much deeper level than what we do. So, yeah, I love it.
May I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, sure.
I'm working with a company that's on the New York Stock Exchange. They have several plants. They make products for airplanes. So it's really critical. When we went in to do the work, we found that engineering, production, and quality were all siloed. Sound familiar?
Sounds familiar, yeah, yes.
Pretty typical.
Yeah.
However, their end user wanted the best price. Their stockholder wanted profit. The vendor wants as much for the materials, and the employees want to be paid well. So the only cost savings is for engineering to find continuous improvement processes, for manufacturing to agree to implementation, maintenance to do that work, and quality to make sure nobody gets killed doing it. We identify that the people element was missing. The people element. I talked to engineering and I said, do you have a way of recognizing people who do great work? And they said, oh yeah, we have this program where you send in this thing and they give them a gift card and they recognize them. I said, great. When's the last time you gave one of those to someone from maintenance? The people who were there at 3 o'clock in the morning called out of bed to come and fix something. We came to the conclusion that the way maintenance was viewed was they took too long. That's how their sacrifice was measured. They took too long. I'm thinking, good grief, they were here all weekend long. They missed their family. They missed their son's football game or baseball game to fix this piece of equipment. And all we say is they took too long.
Too long, yeah.
We started having them look for good, to recognize people for a great job. Something miraculous happened 2 weeks ago. The head of that plant stood up in front of the team and said, we have never had cooperation like this between the teams. This is incredible. All we did was have them look for the good in a person's idea, incorporate it, notice what somebody's doing that's important, and recognize them. The message to the corporate world is, we can't keep driving just for the bottom line profit at the expense of the people, because it's the people that create the profit. Mm. And when they feel valued, their wall comes down, their cooperation and energy flood out. And what organization couldn't use more cooperation and energy? Because when we just are siloed and it's all about the bottom line and it's all about right and wrong and win and lose and life and death, we're leaving 40, 50, 60% of a person's creativity out in the car in the parking lot. Let's make people matter again. Too many CFOs, the bean counters, ended up running the companies. No offense, CFOs. You're the numbers guys. Bring the people back. They matter. And when they feel like they matter, they'll take bullets for you.
Yeah, very important message there. And having spent a lot of years in the corporate world, I certainly saw a lot of that behavior. And like you say, the best results were when you got the people on board and people were engaged.
I said silo, and the audience couldn't see because I'm watching you on video conferencing, and you had this giant smile on your face like, oh, man, I know that place. Oh, we got to talk to each other.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Oh, I love this, Dave. I really could go on for ages, but I'm aware of the time now. So I think it's time we moved on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience that are primarily innovators and leaders in their own fields with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions that I'm going to ask. Hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers from you and people will go away and do something awesome today.
Let's hope so.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Be in touch with a creative thought process and learn how to use it constructively. Most people are using it to worry and to fantasize, catastrophize. We want to learn how to use it to mentally rehearse, seek inspiration, plan, goal set, problem solve, explore. So we get inspired ideas from it. It is the source of an inspired idea. I talked earlier about wiring, functional MRI. We actually see parts of the brain ignites our passion. It's passion that drives our action. Otherwise, action's boring, mundane, burdensome, repetitive, hard. Learn how to use your mind constructively to get inspired ideas.
Great advice. I love it. And I was talking with Dave Burse, who wrote a a new book or published a new book recently called How to Get Great Ideas, and he quotes in there some experimentation about MRI experiments where they get people to visualize an idea or something and how that lights up the brain. So it's definitely a scientific proven fact.
It is, absolutely. Mm. We're built for it.
Yeah.
We're not built to worry.
Yeah. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Surrender my own. Let go of the need to be right.
Yeah.
It's looking for good in everybody else's idea. We're not programmed this way. In a systemic thought, right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, all, nothing. It's like to be open to an idea is to be wrong. We have to get out of systemic thought into extrinsic thought where we find good, intrinsic thought where we love the people. If we can get out of the systemic right, wrong, look for the good in ideas, oh my goodness, that is a good idea. Wow, that sparks something in us. It sparks something in someone else. And that collaborative sparking creates something really magnificent. So it's letting go of the need to be right.
Hmm. Yeah, great advice. And there's that ego thing again, which it's important in some ways, but a lot of the times it gets in your own way and is destructive, right?
Well, 97% of all leaders are obsessive thinkers. And the greatest risk is getting attached to an idea.
Yeah.
And if we are, 97% of the time, when we're right, somebody else needs to be wrong. That's 100% of the time. But 97% of the time, we're pushing a self-esteem button.
Mm.
It's not the topic that's being discussed. They're in self-esteem preservation. We're calling into question their worth as a human being, their ability, their character, their contribution. That's why they defend silly ideas. It's not the idea any longer. So we just got to get out of that space.
Mm. Yeah. And I think politics is a great example of where that has gone to the extreme.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway, that's another topic. Don't want to go there. We'll be here all day. What's your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
It's a really simple concept. It's making a decision. Tony Robbins talks about to decide means to cut off.
Yeah.
To make a decision so the actions follow. Because we sometimes confuse decisions and actions. If the action's a decision, we'll relitigate it every day. Make a decision. I have so much fun now making one. I made one July 23rd. Today happens to be the 19th. I know this will air later, the 19th of November. But I've lost 38 pounds because I made the decision to become optimally healthy. I've got 16 more to go by December 18th, 2018. I will be at this weight.
Yeah,
I made that decision already. Actions are following. I don't have to relitigate it every day. The exercise program, boom, up at 5:30 this morning, doing it. Actions follow. So the greatest thing for personal improvement has been getting in the habit of making non-negotiable, absolute decisions and having the actions follow.
Yeah. Great advice. Yeah, I love that. And it kind of takes away from, oh, I've got to get up and do this because your decision is really clear and the why and the goal that you visualized is very clear.
Well, to make a decision of that magnitude, you got to have a why big enough to make it. Yeah. So the why comes before the decision, clearly.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's the best way you know that how to keep a client on track with something like that? Let's say they make a decision to do X, whatever that might be. What's the best way to keep them on track?
I found the best way to help a client is to step into their world and really listen and help them find their why. And it's got to be something that can be converted into a measurable outcome. So when they make the decision, it's not, I'm going to be a better person. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm going to be at this by this time, a measurable outcome. And then we check in as a coach, sometimes daily with some, that those actions are indeed following. And if they're not, we go back and revisit the decision because it's not a decision. They didn't drop the gauntlet. It didn't fall all the way. They're holding back something. Let's find out what that is. Because once all of those things are gone and they have decided, they've cut off the options, the actions follow.
Mm.
Like day follows night. So it's getting to that point, why decision, monitor action.
Great advice. And it's very powerful when that why and the decision is really clear. Mm-hmm. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I love Og Mandino.
Yeah.
He said, I'll put my differences on display.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop trying to be like everybody else. What are your uniquenesses? What are your unique life experiences, especially the painful ones? Own your uniqueness and bring it to display. Don't try to be like everybody else.
That's great advice.
That's your gift.
Yeah. That's right. And I love the spin you've put on that in terms of, you know, painful experiences are actually your gift, and by sharing those and using them to connect with others, that's certainly something that would differentiate you from most people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This has been absolutely fabulous, Dave. Where can people get in touch with you and thank you for what you've shared today and maybe have a look at the Habits Finder?
Yeah, just go to habitfinder.com and take the Habit Finder. And if there's anything we can do to serve you, we'll send you letters. You'll have our email address. You'll have phone numbers. You can contact us. But we want you to have that experience. Take 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then read the report. We've got, just through this wall to my right, an entire department of customer service agents. They're Habit Finder specialists. Their only job is to help people better understand their Habit Finder. And when they better understand it, if they say, well, what do I do about this? What can I do? Then they refer them to someone who can help them go further. But not only is the Habit Finder free, that discussion's free.
Yeah.
Make sure you take advantage of it.
Great offer. Yeah. All right. We'll have links to that in the show notes as well as to the other website address you mentioned. So we've got you know, links to the book and the Og Mandino company.
Ogmandino.com.
Yep. Yeah.
By the way, you can download the 10 scrolls for free. Start putting them in your life, practicing them. Yep.
All right. So finally, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
Lead by example. I think it's critical for a leader to be solid from the core out. You can't be living a secret private life of really bad habits and leading people. People can feel it. So start with inside. And create the very best version of you and then encourage everybody else to follow you. That's leadership.
Advice. Yeah. Yeah, lead by example. All right. Now, one final question before we wrap up. Who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, we've got a consultant that we brought into our organization. We spend a lot of money every month with him. And he has just kicked our fanny. Jason Cisneros. Anton J is the name of the company. You would love him. Now, sometimes I have to cover my wife's ears because sometimes his language can be a little colorful. But he is one of the most knowledgeable business consultants I have ever met.
Yeah.
He came into our organization, gave us a thorough review, and then he meets with us every Monday. Right after this, we meet. And we go through our goals from last week and how well we did. There's the team. Everybody's reporting on what they did. We set new ones for the next week, and then we do a storm. We just brainstorm everything. Last week, in that brainstorm, is when the name Habit Slayer, Conquering the Enemy That Never Sleeps, was born. If you want to have those kind of experiences, I'll give you Jason's information. You get in touch with him and have him come. He'd love to be on your show, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds fascinating. So, Jason, if you're listening to this, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation to the InnovaBuzz podcast courtesy of Dave Blanchard. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time with us today, Dave. This has been really fascinating. I was really looking forward to this, and it certainly hasn't disappointed. I've loved every minute, enjoyed it immensely, learned a lot, and hopefully we can keep in touch. I wish you all the best for the future for the new products within the Habit Finder, the Habit Slayer, and also for the future of the Old Mandino Company.
Wonderful. And The Greatest Salesman is being made into a movie.
That's right. I completely forgot to touch on that. So that's you're producing that, aren't you?
The executive producer asked me to write the script. I haven't written for 25 years, but yeah. I'm doing it. So I guess it's going to get done. So very exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and look forward to seeing that as well, because that should be really exciting. And if anyone hasn't actually read Og Mandino's book, I highly recommend you do that, because it is a really the greatest salesman in the world. And there's a bunch of others that he's written that are great as well. All right. Well, thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I certainly hope you enjoyed that inspiring conversation with Dave and, like me, appreciate his generosity in sharing his experience so openly and transparently with us. For me, the key messages in Dave's interview were, firstly, that your own negative experiences are part of you and you should embrace them because they're part of who you are and they can be used to empathize with and better serve others. And secondly, that a focus on service is always going to lead to success. Of course, there was so much more in this interview with Dave. I'd love to know what you took away from Dave's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Dave Blanchard. That is DaveBlanchard. DaveBlanchard. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Dave Blanchard. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Dave there, as well as links to the Og Mandino website and the Habits Finder that we spoke about. Dave suggested I interview Jason Cisneros, entrepreneur, speaker, and business architect on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Jason, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Dave Blanchard. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/MAS to access the complimentary marketing health check for your business. Remember that this offer is only available until the 15th of January 2019, so we're using our quiet period to actually help our podcast audience with this complimentary offer. And as of the 15th of January, we probably won't have the resources to do it on an ongoing basis. So hurry up, get over to innovabiz.co/MAS now and jump on to that complimentary marketing health check. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.